This is Ansel Doing It podcast. We're two queer Latinx besties navigating academia and trying to stay sane in the process. Each week, we talk about identity, relationships, astrology, and mental health.
Join us as we figure out how to stay on top of our lives, our horoscopes, and our own self-work in these borderlands.
Hi friends, just wanted to jump in before the episode begins and let you know that we recorded this before the GameStop, Robinhood, Das Capital debacle. We'll be covering that in a future episode, so enjoy this conversation. Unrelated, but very relevant. Hi friend.
Hello.
Hello there.
Hi.
How's it going?
It's going. How are you doing?
I'm okay. Considering the circumstances, I think I say that every time, but shit has not improved since.
I mean, yeah, we're still in the fire.
Very much so. I think every day we're finding out more and more about how much of an inside thing this capital thing was, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we've been knowing, but I'm glad people are finding out.
Yeah, that it was an inside job for sure.
It had to be.
It had to be.
There's no way.
For cops to just welcome in these people. I mean, they're brothers, you know, they're kin. They were just letting them walk in. So, I mean, yeah.
Yeah, there was
the extent of it, right?
Oh, absolutely. And from all over the country, like, they just found out one LAPD officer was there. So I'm sure tons of PD from all over the country were present in uniform and out of uniform.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it's been interesting seeing people's reactions to that. I know our last episode really dealt with it as it was happening, but a week later, I think there's been an array of reactions, right? Still.
Yeah.
How are you doing? What's going on over there in Oakland?
You know, I'm totally checked out from what's happening in the news. I mean, I'm getting bits and pieces, right? Like, I saw that Trump was impeached again, and the only thing in news I'm invested in is, which kind of ties to what we're talking about today, is seeing these news blurbs about if Biden's gonna cancel student loans or not. I mean,
that's my God, really yes.
Investment right now in the news is like, this motherfucker, does he know that $10,000 ain't gonna do shit to my student loans? Do you know how much debt I'm in school loans? Do you know how long I was in school?
Not even a dent. You know? Not even a dent.
No, that's not going to make a dent in my shit. Like,
I had a full-on convo this morning about this very topic.
Yeah. I'm sure he didn't pay shit for his schooling, you know, so he's probably like $10,000, you know, like, no, that's not enough, sir.
I mean, he also went to school in 1900, so like, you know.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm sure exactly. It was cheaper.
Tuition was like $25 for a year.
Exactly. So nada que ver. Yeah, I hope that I hope he does the right thing. That's all I'm gonna say about that. You know, but at the end of the day, let's not rely on him either.
Oh no, I am not. I do not have any high expectations for that. For him, her, or Kamala, like, I know the inauguration's coming up. I don't know what the hell is gonna happen. I think he should be online, you know. He should be on Zoom just like everything else.
I think that's what I said too. Can we do the little clapping emoji when he gets inaugurated?
Exactly. Like, everything should be on Zoom. Protect this man at all costs. Like, you know, just let him get inaugurated. Then if his health happens, let that happen. But let this fool get inaugurated, protect him, like protect Kamala, you know, like.
Yeah, just host a Zoom call, you know, that way everybody can show up. And
yeah. Disable the chat, disable everything, right? Just so there's no Zoom bombers, but, you know.
No backtalk. No backtalk at all.
Just stream it. You know, just stream it online. We don't need to. But I did see actually that the California National Guard is in D.C. kind of trying to handle preemptively handle anything that may not happen.
Anything can happen.
Protests.
They're telling people not to go. So people who do go.
Send the Zoom link, yo.
Honestly, I'm ready for everything to be a Zoom now. I'm like, okay, let's just show up, I guess. Like, you know, same. I don't think I've seen, to be real with you, any inauguration except for like the first Obama one. Because it's not that I was drinking the Kool-Aid. I just wanted to see what it'd be like. But I don't think I've seen any other one. So this wouldn't be the one I'm like, oh, I'm sad I missed it. Like, you know, I'm okay. Just send the link.
I mean, they kind of happen, like they're few and far between, you know? So like,
right.
I mean.
And I think this one is more anxiety inducing than most. So I just want it to be over before it starts, you know, just wanted to get it over with. Yeah. So we'll see what happens.
We're still living in this fire. So yeah, I mean, we're here. Everything's good with me. Otherwise, I think. Yeah, I mean, you know,
you're living that break life right now, huh?
I'm not teaching right now, which is great because I'm focusing on other things that are work, right? Or personal things that are personal that are work, which is what we'll talk about too, right? But we were earlier talking about I'm working on my book proposal still and figuring that out and trying to write on the work on the book that I'm writing, and then have been also spending my time learning about becoming financially literate. It's called financial literacy, right? Like, so kind of exploring that and learning more about money, learning more about building wealth, and we'll get into that. That's mostly what we're going to talk about today in our relationship to that. But I've been spending, and I've been thinking about it, I'm like, I think because of COVID, also because where I am in my life and having income and time, right? I think because COVID slowed things down, I've been able to actually research this stuff and really think about this stuff and have the time to really, you know, not just think about my work, but also think about the money that work gives me and how I can maximize that in ways that when we're kind of like going outside of COVID, right, that it's really hard to make time to do things that also feel scary, that for me historically have felt like things that were not for me to know about or think about or, you know, to have a grasp on or whatever.
That's real.
So I've been taking a deep dive into learning, being a student again in terms of of that, and also catching up on reading and in terms of like my research work and reading stuff on. I'm reading right now this book by Marcia Ochoa, Queen for a Day, where she looks at trans women beauty queens and the performance of femininity in Venezuela.
Ooh, okay.
And like the performance of trans women in these pageants, right? And how that speaks to them performing femininity, but also what that means of like Venezuela and like femininity in this national kind of like performance.
Are we sharing our cute little nerdy reads right now? Because I'm
sure. That's one of my reads. And what's next on cue for my nerd reads for my research?
Yeah,
is this other book by Jianneo Chen called "Trans Exploits: Trans of Color Cultures and Technologies in Movement."
That sounds so that cover. I wish y'all could.
Yeah,
see it.
Yeah, so it's a pretty cool cover, but they look at basically looks at media and literature, and also look at performance and I needed to read it more so to give you a better synopsis, but it's actually really cool because it also, I think one of their last chapters looks at Jenyset Gutierrez, who's a trans Latina, and they talk about how she shut down Obama's his LGBT or his Pride Month like celebration in DC a few years ago, and how she was it was all respectability, whatever politics, and she like started yelling like, what about like end ICE detention, like get trans women out of ICE, and she ended up being like escort, like kicked out.
She's a G. I love her.
Right, so like this book, this one of the last chapters talks about that, right? Getting read up on, you know, queer trans things for my own book.
I love it. I'm reading kind of like a hummingbird right now because I'm finishing the disc. So I'm like visiting books for pieces that I need. So I'm grazing the field. But I recently got to reread Algorithms of Oppression by Sophia Noble. And it's basically
the one with the Google cover.
I
want to read that.
You would enjoy it a lot, actually. It's great. It's, I think, required reading for anyone navigating technology, which is all of us. Like, it speaks to basically how algorithms and decision making codes in any code on the internet is racially biased, and talks about how the root of racism is anti-blackness. So it's great. Like, she is such a gem. I think she's a rock star, and I would freak out if I met her. That's my celebrity.
She a professor?
She teaches at UCLA, and she's in the information sciences.
Oh,
yes.
So you can actually meet her.
I mean, not right
now. Well, not anymore because of COVID, but.
But if I wanted to, maybe I could. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. She's on the same campus as me, but that doesn't mean anything these days. Because we're all kind of, you know, these little boxes on Zoom. But yeah, I've been reading that. I also really enjoyed Chicana Artivistas by Marta Gonzalez, which is like, in my own field anyway, like just like you're reading trans stuff, I read a lot of stuff by artists or for artists. So her work has been such an inspiration to me. She's a Grammy winning musician and a scholar at Cal Poly Pomona, at the Claremont Colleges. And she's just great. She's such a model of like a community creative worker. Love her. So if you want a book Rex, there you go. from your two friendly neighborhood nerds.
Yeah, that's what I was telling Anisha the other day. I'm like, God, I don't know why I fight being a nerd so hard. It like legit.
You really do.
I have fought it for so long, and I never thought that I was that, but.
You are.
Yeah, this is who I am. And I need to embrace it so that I can do the work of a nerd and write a fucking book.
You're like those kids in Stand and Deliver, you know? That they're super smart, but they fight it a little bit, right? Because it's been
because it's not cool,
right?
It's not cool, it's not stylish, you know. It's not that's not what the homies, you know, are about.
I'm still not cool. I do want to preface that. I don't think anyone who goes into a PhD is cool.
I know, but I've always struggled with it. I've always been on that borderline of like, I want to be cool more than I want to be smart.
Oh my God.
But unless it's street smarts, right? Then it's like, okay, yeah. Because that's a type of knowledge that we don't see as being... we don't value it, at least in academia or in like these institutional spaces, right? But anyway, so I fought it for so long, but I can be cool and be a nerd is what I've told myself.
That's right. We can be both. Speaking of knowledge that is actually valued and sought after under a capitalist system, today we're talking about money. It might be a dirty word to some of you, might be a dirty and a good word at the same time.
Scary word.
Scary, unknown, might be a word you don't know about.
Who is she?
Yeah, we're talking today about our relationship to money. Essentially, this might be more than one part because there's a lot here. But we wanted to kind of start the convo and give you all a sense of how far we've come, I think. You know, with our relationship to managing our money, handling our money, but also dealing with it in partnership, because I think that's where it gets juicy. like, how do you work with someone else at the same time as you're working on your own shit, right? That's like the thesis of this podcast. So,
I mean, especially knowing that the majority of marriages that end... And due in a large part because of money.
Yeah.
Right? So, yeah. It's a lot, but we're going to do it. And I think that's why it took us so many years. We've had this podcast for a few years, but it's taken us a long time to talk about this because we're in a place now where we're doing work around it, right?
We're facing it in a way that I think we haven't faced it before, which I think is important. So we can get to that, but I guess first I want to start with what has been, because this is a lifelong relationship, unfortunately, if we were in a different economic system. But I know blue, right? Like, he agrees with me. What has been your relationship to money, friend? What has been your struggle? Cue the violins.
I mean, look, it's been difficult. I grew up in poverty. I think that shapes a lot of how my relationship to money, but I think people who grow up in poverty and grow up with financial struggles deal with money in very different ways, right? I can compare myself to my brother, right? Who's the oldest, who, you know, he's dealt with money in a very different way than I have, right? I think for us, at least, or for me, there's been always a sense of fear and a sense of scarcity with money, right? That's the core, the root of it, really, right? Is this mentality that there is never enough, there's never going to be enough, and therefore it places limits onto what I see possible, but it also and that affects my wants and needs and also my dreams of planning for the future, right? And but that there's also for me these ideas or this, there's been this internalization of thinking that I'm not good with money, that I'll never be good with money. That's kind of like the larger, I've been doing some work in therapy around this as well.
But that's the demon we're fighting.
That's the kind of overarching, you know, story around my relationship to money. But I think, you know, on a more basic level, I think, you know, for me, I I grew up not only in poverty, on welfare, with a single parent, with three children, right? So, you know, it was like when there's a lot of shame around, there was a lot of shame around growing up in that way. Around having, you know, this is before food stamps were on a credit card looking thing, right? Like
this is when you, like, this is, yeah, you had to take out the thing.
This is when food stamps were in these little packets, like these little coupon looking books that, you know, you had to, you could only use them at certain stores. You could only use them on money. I mean, you could only use them on food. Right? You couldn't buy other things. It was just like for food and like necessities, I think, right? Because the state has to police and control how poor people spend their money. So there's always also been a lot of shame, right? With, I remember being really young and being at the grocery store and feeling so much embarrassment when my mom would pull out the food stamps. And like, I want to just hurry up and be done so nobody would see. And I don't know where I learned that, you know, like that shame, because my mom didn't feel that shame. Right. So, but I felt that shame for sure. And so, you know, I think that it's definitely a class thing. And, you know, we were listening to a talk by Rosie Bermudez the other day, right? Who's a postdoc at UCLA, and her work is on the welfare rights movement. And she was saying, like, you know, we always talk about like the working class or the working poor, but we never talk about the poor people, right? People who aren't even working,
right?
Like, And so that was my experience, right? There's so much emotional, psychological trauma around money for me from a very young age of like around class, right? Not just in terms of what we had or what we didn't have, but also how people treated my mom.
Yeah.
And how people treated me, and how, and of course, you know, this would all also be very different too if we, that experience would have been far worse if we were not white, right? Like white Latinxes. And so you know, they're not looking at, I mean, I know they're looking at, we're looking at my mom in some senses of a welfare queen, but that's not who that was, you know. That identity was not made for that. That was to mark black women,
black women,
right?
Yeah.
Black poor women. And but, you know, like my mom being a single mother, and like, you know, I'd have to go with her to like the welfare office or to the Social Security Administration, because she was also disabled. So she she wasn't able to work when I was growing up. She worked when my brothers were younger, but by the time I came around and turned like two or three or something, like she could no longer work because of her disabilities. And so, so I think there's so much there, right? That is more than just the money, but the kind of like, what it meant to go to these different institutions and to be treated like shit, to be treated like less than, to be assumed to be taking advantage of the system when we're barely scraping by. And so that's like, these are the early memories, right? On holidays, going to pick up free food and free turkeys, like for Thanksgiving and things like that. Like,
So your hatred of the bus and public transit.
My hatred of public transit. And my mom, you know, is not, let alone like, we couldn't afford a car probably, but like my mom didn't, like she had a fear of driving, so like we always, from a young age, because she had gotten into an accident when she was learning how to drive, and so she never learned how to drive. And so after that, and so having to be on public transit and the type of people you see on public transit, and so it's affected a lot of my life. So I think when I, you know, when I turned 15 and was able to work, I worked to be able to present myself in a way that would not show that I was poor. So a lot of my money went to, I mean, at that time, I didn't really have bills, right? Like I was 15.
That
like,
too, yeah. What were you paying? You know, at that
time? my mom, and I also didn't have to help my mom, right? And that's why I'm saying my brother has had a very different experience from me as the oldest, as he really took the responsibility of a father, or thinking he needed to step in as a father. And so he's the one that supported my mom. He's always been very responsible with money, very good with money,
because he had to be.
He's wanted to make money, you know, and because he had to be. Whereas me, I'm kind of like, I don't need to go into making money. Like, I want to pursue my intellectual passions. And I know I'm going into a profession that's never going to pay me. You know, like, whereas my brother has, since he was young, really worked multiple jobs, worked to support my mom and us, and worked to, like, always have money to send her and work, you know? Mm-hmm. So that's what I'm saying, like, fear, the way it manifests looks very different, right? In terms of fear of money or not having enough money or the scarcity. But for me, it looked this particular way because I had my brother, right? Like, he was supporting my mom financially. So essentially, any money that I had was
just for you,
for me, because they were like, you don't have to go through that, right? Especially my brother, you don't have to work a job if you don't want to, like, you know, because I had that. I mean, not that it was a lot, right? Because we were, even up to when I was 18, my mom was still, we're still on welfare.
And when you're young, you want a lot of things, right? When you're young and you...
Totally. Especially when you're going, for me, you're going to school in really affluent places and you're going to school with parents who are millionaires, or when a lot of my classmates are rolling to school with BMWs when I'm in high school, BMWs and Range Rovers and Mercedes and like... You know?
They're in the Palisades, yeah.
So my Mercedes were my currency... to like flaws or to show out was Jordans. That was my, you know, or like the newest.
That was your marker.
Or clothes. It was clothes and shoes. Right. And so, and that really, you know, the one thing I did learn from my brother and family was it's important to pay your bills. And then for me, the rest of the money was I could burn it on things that would make me look nice or would elevate my class status.
On the outside, at least.
On the outside, right? On the outside. Mm-hmm. And if you think of poverty, right? Like
it is a performance.
You can only control how people perceive you externally in some ways, right? And so with clothes and shoes and cars and things that are more accessible than homes or, you know, other things. And so for me, it was like, I was always good with paying my bills. I knew credit was important. So I always took care of my credit. I got a credit card when I was 18, but, you know, I think I did, because of that, I got into this cycle of debt of like,
right.
I would pay my credit card bills, but I was always pay the minimum. And I took out a bunch of school loans because I knew also that education was important, and that as long as it was for education and I was on the right path, that it was okay.
Right.
That was okay debt to have. Right. And so I think that kind of just, I mean, continued right for a while. Like, but there was always stress around money. There was always stress around not having enough because, you know, I was buying all of these other things again to kind of to give myself a life that I want, you know, on the outside I wanted to perform or wanted to have or whatever. And so I have mostly always dated people that were middle class or that at least had middle class ideals
in terms middle class of behaviors
money, behaviors around money, that they knew how to save, they knew how to budget, they always had a plan financially for the future. And you know, we can talk more later about like the relationships and stuff, but
yeah,
I think now I'm kind of like, this is no longer serving me. Like I need to do something different. Like I'm now at a place where I've been trying to get rid of my credit card debt that I've accumulated over the last 10 years. And especially going through graduate school, right? Where you don't get paid well.
Not at all. No.
So not only did I have school loans, but I took out additional credit cards, additional loans that I probably wouldn't have had to, that were education loans for my schooling, but that I had to use for my quality of living, right?
Right.
So that's kind of like the, now I'm in this space where I've been trying to really change my relationship to money. I think up to this point, I've been very afraid of it. I've felt, I started using this platform called You Need a Budget that helps you not just with budgeting, but they have a lot of financial literacy stuff that is actually really accessible and really engaging. It's not boring, and it's really, they make it really accessible is the best word I can say. But they shared this post the other day that I was like, fuck, this is me. So it's like, they call it this 6 myths that could be financially holding you back. One,
let's hear them.
This idea that I'll never be good with money. It's just who I am. Two, I'll always be in debt. It's just the reality. Three, I'll be fine once I get that raise or promotion. So this idea, right, that if I just make more money,
right,
then I'll be okay. But the reality is, if you don't have the tools or the infrastructure to take care of your money, it doesn't matter if you're making $1,000 a year or 10 million, right? You're going to handle it in the same ways. Four, I do just fine. I don't need a budget. Five, I don't have enough money. And six, having a budget means I'll never have fun again. So
you were number six for sure.
I mean, I was all of these. And that's what scared me about having a budget, is that like, what? Then I can't buy nice things, or I can't live.
Or I can't be spontaneous, you know?
Yeah. And I think the poverty for me, the way the script has in my mind played out, has been like, I'm never going to have enough. Whether it's money, I'm never going to be good enough. But in terms of how it plays out in money, is like, and there's never going to be enough because there never was.
Right. Exactly. Right?
There was always scraping by for 18 years of my life. There never was enough.
And that's what you're familiar with, right? It's also about what do we know?
That's where I live. That's where I'm comfortable. In the,
scarcity.
Scarcity is, it's stressful, but it's also like familiar.
Yes. So, and you've seen people navigate that, you know, for better or worse. You've seen how people navigate that. You know what to do in that scenario because the other one is so unfamiliar.
Yeah. And it's like, how do you break 2 decades worth of, or 3 decades worth of functioning, right?
Lots of therapy.
Of this really toxic cycle.
Yeah.
So that's me in a, you know, really condensed nutshell. But what about you?
I also think you're not giving yourself enough credit for how hard you've been working. I do want to acknowledge that. Like, you have really done a 360 from when I met you, from the Jordan face I got to witness, right? I just want to honor that because you have come a long way. I mean, we joke about it now, but like, we used to go out shopping and you would get 2 pairs in one trip, you know, just for fun. I would also buy my own things.
When the school loans hit, I mean, you'd go to Sephora, I'd go to Foot Locker.
Right, exactly. Like, you would watch me, you know, rack up the money at Sephora. I would watch you go to Foot Locker. We're kind of on the same wavelength at that time, which is important to think about. For me, it's been somewhat the same, but not really. I think for me, it's more about money being tied to my freedom of movement. So like, I didn't grow up with, you know, the type of poverty you did. I was growing up poor in another country. So I grew up in Mexico, as all of you know. And back in Mexico, my mom was a single mother with 2 kids at the time. And she was a hustler. Like, I come from a hustler mentality, right? Where, like, I always have hustled and know how to hustle, but I don't know how to save the money from the hustles, right? So, like, for me growing up, I saw people working multiple jobs. I thought that was normal. I still think that's normal.
Yeah, totally.
I think people with one job scared me because I'm like, what do they do? Like, how do they bring in more cash? Like, I was always sort of that kid who was watching their mother do three jobs and think that's normal and sustainable. It's not. But I definitely understood that, like, my mother had to do that to be able to even make ends meet. So my mom, like a lot of us, our parents are the models that teach us how to handle money, right? And we see how they do it and we think, oh, that's how I should do it, because we learn from them. So my mom was very much somebody who made a lot of her life choices with money in mind. She kind of made me more calculated. And I can see that now, like, as a grown up, that, like, the reason that I am so calculated with money and so decisive is her, because she always was very like, I'm doing this, I'm doing this. And even her choice to leave, right? Her choice to leave Mexico was based in providing me and my sister an opportunity to go to college. Like, that was pretty clear. Like, she knew that our opportunities and choices in Mexico were not going to be very much. Like, I literally would have had three kids by now if I'd stayed. You know, I would have been maybe working at a local tourist shop selling keychains, or maybe, let's be real, I think about that a lot. I think about the life I would have had if I'd stayed. And I think a lot of immigrants do. I've made peace with the person I'm not if I'd stayed, but I think I'm not letting that parallel life dictate my decisions now. Where before, like, when I got my first job at 16, I was like, kind of like you, where it was my first job, I was getting a paycheck, I was really excited, I didn't have to pay anyone's bills except my own. My sister and I were really financially independent from the very beginning. My mom was very clear that, like, our money was our money, you know, and we could spend it however we wanted. That was, like, as much as financial literacy as we got. We didn't get told to get a bank account or a credit card. I didn't get my first credit card until I was in college, because I had to buy books. I remember very vividly, like, I didn't have enough money for books for the semester. And somebody was like, why can't you just put it on a credit card? And I was like, what? So I remember going that day to apply for a credit card at my bank. And that's how I bought books that semester. And so, yeah, I had no idea about the future planning part of money. I was just really in the present moment, like you, Minnie, maybe, like, I was just very much like, what is due right now?
Yeah.
That's what I'm worried about. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
'Cause, you know, our situations in life force us to live in the now as opposed to living in the future. Then I got through college and I made the financial choice to live at home for my undergrad because I didn't have a choice. So that choice was made for me when I saw the tuition. And honestly, you know, as a first gen student, moving away from home was really scary and unknown. And I just decided to do the safe thing and live at home. I didn't know then I was saving hella money. But I think I've sacrificed my privacy. Like, I sacrificed a lot of things for doing the right thing in the case of that. So now I notice that, like, the way I've changed with money, like, I've prioritized my privacy when it comes to money. Like, I love where my living situation now. I've been in some really shitty living situations because of money. You know, we'll talk about that later. But, like, I've put up with a lot of, I think this is where the relationship to money is like your relationship to your self-worth, right? How much do you think you're worth? Yeah. I didn't think very highly of myself for a long time, you know, and that reflected so much on the money.
Totally.
Yep. I put up with a lot.
I agree. That's real. That is hard to hear, but it's real.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, because if I wanted to, I could have not had roommates, right, that were horrible. If I wanted to, I could have lived on my own instead with a partner who was really horrible with money, right? So I think for me, like, I didn't think highly enough of myself to do that, so I didn't do it. And my money reflected that, right? I also, to just finish, like, the way that I've changed recently is, like, take it to astrology maybe. But whenever I got my chart read, I have Pluto in my house of money. And Pluto is a really difficult placement. It basically means you're either a millionaire or you're super poor. There's no, Pluto is extremes. Like, Pluto is Scorpio sign. It's regeneration. It's rebirth. So, like, it means that my money is either going to be in stacks or none at all. That's my choice, right? I have the potential for both. It means I have to suffer to get through to the stacks, right? I can't just get the stacks. So when I heard that, I was like, fuck, okay. And I've suffered a lot. I've gotten a lot of money come in, but I think as a result, I've had to grow up a lot around my management of it, right? So, like, my artwork has been difficult to get off the ground money-wise. I didn't make any money for years on that. And now that I'm at a place where it is creating profit, I have to be really good at it. Otherwise, like, it's easy to let it go, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think for me, it's been, the last year has been really transformative, and I am ready to talk about it, right? But for a while, I was really just lost and trying to catch up with people that had generational wealth and literacy, because I did not have that. So
yeah, and I think that, like, I think that I just want to say about, like, I think when you grow up not having generational wealth, right? Like, regardless, right? Like, you learn how to hustle.
Yeah.
Right. You have to learn how to hustle. Otherwise you just drown. Right. But, like, you have to learn how to hustle. And so, like, yeah. I mean, I think that was something that I had to learn really early on. Right. Like, if I want nice things, I have to hustle for that shit. Right. Cause it's not just going to find land on my lap. Yeah. It's not going to land on my lap. Like, you know, I mean, I've definitely been an advocate for finding a sugar daddy, but up to this point, like, that has not come to fruition. So
like, I too want to seize the means of production.
but what you were talking about makes me think about how, like, I think because I learned to hustle and because there's also this stress of scarcity of money and not knowing, I think the way that's also manifested is that's how I would prioritize, or that would take priority, right? Like, even in grad school, thinking about that, like, I was always not just the taking out loans, but always like, let me find a TA ship, let me find ways to make more money because I'm living in poverty, and that fear, right? That fear that it wouldn't allow me to just live within my impoverished means and just focus on my work, right?
The luxury of anybody who goes to grad school just to go to grad school. Like, we didn't have that luxury,
you know? Yeah. And even now, you know, like, even this year, right, I have now an income. I'm making more money than I've ever made in my life, right? I have, like, stability, but I took up a job. I took up a side hustle. And I did it for the money, right? I did it to have X amount of extra money every month. And I did it all summer until the end of fall of last year. And it was all online, which was great. And it was only like 6 hours. So it wasn't that much, or like 4 to 6 hours a week, but it wasn't that much. And it paid well for those little bit of hours. It made a difference. But then I hated the work. Right. Like, cause now I'm fortunate, right, to, like, I can pick and choose what I do.
Yeah.
But I noticed that I was like, this taking up this side hustle is from this scarcity mentality that is still living with me, so much so that like, I don't have to choose this anymore. If I want to make more money, that's fine, but I don't have to choose to do work that no longer aligns with the work that I want to do. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm, you know, because the scarcity has always made me feel like I can't even focus on me and develop myself because I need to hustle to survive.
Right.
And I don't need to hustle to survive anymore. But for 18 years of my life, or really more than 18 years, but you know, for a very long time, the hustle and the bringing up money was because out of this need to survive. But that has stayed with me and has been like embedded within me in my DNA. And it's like, I need to unlearn that shit. And I told, this is the first year that I told myself, I'm no longer accepting work, the extra income, if it is not aligned with my passions and desires and where I want to be in the future. So no, I'm not gonna take money from my brother to work at his law firm to do admin stuff because he pays really well. I'm no longer doing that. I haven't had this conversation with him, but I think he knows, right? Like, because it's easy for him to just hire me to do this stuff. I even did that the summer before I started working as a professor, right? But it's those kinds of things. Like now I'm kind of like, I really have to change my relationship to money because money buys you time, right? And I'm giving my time away to make money so that I can, but at expense of who? At the expense of me. Because then I can't sit here and read these fucking nerdy ass books, right? And actually write the book that I want to write because that scarcity is telling me I need to go hustle and do these things. But no, I can actually just, you know, change my relationship to money, change my relationship to budgeting, you know.
And time is money.
There is a lot of growth. There is a lot of growth. And I'm like this, you know, I'm past my Saturn's return, but I think that that's one thing that started even in my Saturn's return, this like changing my relationship to myself and to what grounds me and to how I manage my life. And so, yeah, this whole changing my and facing money is not new, right? But it has been a process because for me, it has been so scary, right? To think about myself as being financially savvy or independent, you know.
Absolutely. That's
autonomous, financially autonomous.
Yes. Like I see it as a requirement for me to level up. Like I knew going into my Saturn return and probably the last 6 months of it were really hard. Because it was almost like somebody was yelling at me and going, bitch, if you want to level up, this is what you need to do. Like you need to learn how to make profit, not waste your time, because time is not renewable. And I think when we think about whose time are we saving by working for them, right? Because when you work for somebody, you're giving them free time. You're basically trading in your free time for their free time. Like,
that's what I'm telling my brother, right?
Yeah. And I'm sure somebody else will gladly give away their time.
Oh yeah.
But for you, not in alignment anymore.
Also, somebody loves that kind of work, right? Mm-hmm. And that's the reality too, right? It's like,
yeah,
that's, that's the power in money, right? Is that and I think we both have this in our chart, right? That like, mm-hmm. we're not supposed to have bosses. Like, we're supposed to be the bosses of our time and ourselves. Like, we're supposed to be self-managed.
Yeah.
Our chart tells us we're not supposed to be at 9-to-5 jobs. We're supposed to be the boss.
Because I think, and it's not just like we think highly of ourselves for that. It's because we are the type of people that are really good at managing ourselves. Like, I think you and I have that in common where like, yeah, we do fuck around a lot, but we definitely know how to structure ourselves. Like, we are very, como se dice, like self-disciplined, right? Mm-hmm. So we are the kind of people that like don't need supervision. Just leave us alone. It'll get done. Like, that's the kind of people we are.
Because we can also be workaholics. And nothing right. wrong with having a 9-to-5 job. But I think that there's people that were made for that, and that's how they thrive, and that's how they, you know, gain their autonomy. But I think that, you know, it's apples and oranges. Like, we've talked about apples and oranges.
I'm a 10-to-12. I have an idea at 11 p.m. kind of person. I'm a wake up at 3 because I just have to draw this right now. Like, that's my schedule, you know. Not for everybody, and definitely not within a 9-to-5 framework. So that's why teaching fits. That's why teaching is great, because you put in the work outside of the hours that are scheduled, right? And it's not, you do have to show up at some point, but it's pretty minimal as far as like when you have to show up. You could do a lot of stuff behind the scenes. So that works. Relationships for me have really almost like accelerated my growth, and maybe sometimes not. So I want to talk a little bit more about, we don't have to name names because the names don't matter. Like, I think of people as lessons. They don't.
Yeah, no, totally.
They don't. It's it's about
also, how have these... some names we just don't want to say out loud, you know?
Let's be real. Some people in my life have passed away, and I don't like talking about dead people. So that's just how it is for me.
Like, passed away figuratively, right?
No, they, to me, like, I am in complete delusion. They're gone.
Same. I guess the same could be said for me.
It just helps me, you know, and I think it's for the best. They are dead in a way.
Do you?
That's what works for me and my therapist. So basically, I think of people as lessons, and I think some of our partners have been people that have come into our lives to teach us financial lessons. So what are some of the financial lessons you've learned via partnership?
I think you can start this one, and then I can.
I have a lot.
I think you had it. Yeah, I think you started some.
I have a couple, because I can't spend 3 hours talking about this. And if we were friends, we have talked about this for hours. I've had kind of everything in between. I've had all kinds of flavors, right? As in regards to like the financial outlook in a partnership. I've had people that, or I've been in partnership with folks that have money generationally and don't worry about money, and that's its own set of issues. I've had people that also grew up in a similar background as me and are struggling financially, unemployment. And, you know, I've had people that are not planning for the future, which at the time was fine, but then it became a problem. And then I've had, you know, my current situation where like, finally I'm aligning with somebody about our goals, and it feels effortless in a sense. Like, there's no fights about it. There's no like,
really?
No. I mean, if we've had disagreements, we agree to disagree and we kind of do our own thing. Does that make sense? Like, we have certain senses of like, we're both doing things differently, but that we're not like stopping talking to each other about it, or like, it's not personal. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's just how that person does their thing. And I'm not going to judge them for it. I'll let them do their thing. I'm doing my thing. So before, though, it was more harmful because it was tied with like my worth, right? So now when somebody is like, oh, this is how I think you should do things, I'm like, that's not what I think I'm worth. So I'm gonna let you have that opinion. That's wrong. But I know what's good for me, you know. For example, like when I was dating somebody who had generational wealth, we came up on a lot of issues because this person never thought about money. It's almost like the opposite of us, right? They never had to worry about it. They had parents who provided and were responsible. And that's beautiful, right? I wish I didn't have to worry about it. That would have been great. But this person never really thought about their finances ever because they didn't have to. So they literally like didn't think about a budget, didn't have a budget. They would just kind of like automate payments and not think about investments or savings even. They knew that like if things went south, they could borrow money. You know, like, I think that's one of the biggest things I can't relate to that I talk about with my current partner a lot, that some people have parents that like, if you need 5K right now for an emergency, medical emergency or something like that, you have people that could let you write you a check. I've never had that security. And, you know, then there's people who value labor and there's people who don't. I had a partner who, the same partner that, you know, grew up with money, where I could see that they didn't value working class labor as much. So like cleaning, they didn't see it as a type of labor. Tidying up or cleaning around the house, housework wasn't something, whereas my mom got paid to do that job. So like, you better believe I knew how much cleaning a bathroom costs.
Yeah.
So I was very aware and conscious of that, whereas that person wasn't. And so we always butted heads on housework because, you know, I was the one that was aware of the labor. I would do it. We talked about getting a housekeeper and I felt weird about hiring somebody to clean up after ourselves because I grew up with like my mom that would do that for other families. And so our house was always spotless, you know. And we split responsibilities around housework, so it didn't have to look like a pigsty. So having somebody who had somebody do their laundry for them and like grew up with a housekeeper was really weird because they didn't expect themselves to do that work. Again, they always had that free time that was, you know, taken up by somebody doing that. So that didn't work out if you didn't figure that out because we had very different expectations of what money could do. And we used our money differently. So it actually ended up being for the best that we parted ways because after that relationship, I started to make money with art. And I know for a fact if I had stayed, that money would have just been sitting there because I wouldn't have been encouraged to grow. I would have just been complacent like this person was with their bank account. I would have been just chill. You know, I wouldn't be motivated to make it grow the way that I am now. So complacency was not the right attitude. And with my current partner, I think money has been sometimes an issue. We've had lots of discussions about it. I think we're both very much on the same page of like, we don't want to not think about the future. So, but I also am strong enough in this relationship to stand up for myself when I need to, right? To keep my assets separate, to understand that like the way that they're doing things is works for them. And that's fine. I wouldn't have been able to do that with any other partner, I think. So it's, you know, it's not that it's not full of fights and like arguments or anything like that, but like the arguments are civil compared to the non-arguments I used to have. Like I went from not talking about it and having resentment to actually having an open discussion about money all the time and understanding the boundaries of around money that we both have. Right.
So my question to you though, was it always easy? So like, what was it like in the beginning when those those conversations weren't easy, right?
So I felt like attacked. Yes,
you've grown a lot, but yeah, tell us that, because I think there's people who don't know even how to. And I will also talk about this, right? Because Anisha and I were in two very different places when we started dating, and that there was a lot of issues around, or not issues, but there was a lot of
misunderstandings
and that.
Yeah.
And we've grown a lot, right? And I can speak to how, but for you, like, what was that process?
You're right.
Because like, I think like you have grown a lot in this partnership, and being in this partnership has like helped you think about the future in ways that you didn't before, and it's made you develop these skills, right? In ways that you didn't before. So like, but I know that that's not how that's you not, came no. into this relationship. I know, you know, so.
I came into this, thank you for reminding me of that.
I know, because I'm like, this bitch sounds like she forgot.
Well, you're talking to me in year five, right? Year one rough. I went into this partnership really defensive and really hurt. I came from a place where like I took everything defensively, let's be real. So when somebody would tell me like, why did you buy that? I would be like, why the fuck can't I buy that? So it's like that.
Why not, bitch?
Right. Yeah. Whereas like 99% of the time, this person was just curious. They weren't even trying to fight me, you know? But I was like that.
I can relate. I can relate.
Yeah. You know that meme of the crab with the little knife?
No, but I can see it.
Yeah. Like a crab in a corner. When you corner a crab or a cancer, it's really scary because they really go and like want to defend for their life. And so
I know because I'm a cancer moon. So that's how I fight.
With the little knife. That's how I went in. And it took me, God, like the first year was rough because we just had very different. I didn't even have a budget when I met my current partner. Let's be real. I needed a budget, but I didn't have one. And I was just spending my money willy nilly, kind of like you, not on Jordans, but on lipstick. And I was just like really happy with that because I had a pot of money. I saw my bank account as a pot of money I could just take from anytime I wanted. And I wasn't thinking about, oh, like, what do I want to do with my money? Like, do I want to retire? Like, what's going on? And I remember it was around year two and a half when we moved in together. When you move in with somebody and you split costs, that's the most vulnerable time in any relationship. that's when you could be packing your bags again, to be honest. And
when they really see you.
They see you, they see your spending habits, they see how you handle yourself in so many ways. And
the it's groceries you buy.
Yes, honestly. Like, and that's still an issue for us. Like, we just got a really high electric bill and we were both talking about it and like thinking about how to cut costs. And like, I know that if we'd gotten that big of a bill 3 years ago, it would have been a huge blowout fight, you know, and we would have blamed each other. But now I'm just like, okay, how can we just not make this happen next month? We made this mistake. Something went wrong. What can we do in the next cycle? And before we would just fight a lot about, I felt really judged by my partner, right? I felt super judged about my spending. And when somebody feels judged, they're not going to listen to you. Mm-mm. They're not listening. They feel judged, they shut down. So I shut down for a lot of it. And then I finally started to just be like, actually, like, it's not productive for me to not be open-minded to what this person has to say. They might actually be right about some of this, not all. And then they sat me down. We made a spreadsheet budget. And I realized how much of my money was just going to things like food and just things I could have saved money on. And I was like, this is why I'm struggling every month to pay for things, because I don't realize that there's sand going through my hands, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. they made me see that in a non-judgmental way. Like, we calmed down, year three, and...
Oh, yeah, I remember this, because you even... I had you talk to Anisha about this, because I'm like, look, bitch, she already got me sitting down. So now it's your turn to sit down and look at this and listen to homeboy, because he's got something to share.
Right. I'm like, fine, I guess I'll let him teach me.
Because I had just, but me and Anisha were doing this at this point already. I had given in.
After the fighting come the spreadsheets, you know, so...
Yeah.
And I will say, this is an if you're listening and you're like, I want my partner to sit me down. It's like, it takes two people to come to the table. They have to be willing, and you have to be open to listening, not talking back. Cause that was my problem. It's like, I was really combative and.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I can relate. Yeah.
So, cause I am so used to maybe portraying or like, projecting this image of like boss girl culture, where like I'm so used to thinking of myself as someone who has everything under control, and it was really vulnerable and embarrassing.
So vulnerable. Yeah.
So sitting down in front of somebody you love and letting them know that you don't know what the fuck you're doing in this part of your life, I thought they would hate me, or I thought they would think less of me. But mm-hmm. someone who truly loves you and wants to see you grow is going to see that and be like, how can we make this better? You know? And that was like a shift after that. Like, I didn't need, once I knew that person saw me for all that and still wanted to stay, I was like, well, now I could just get to work. So that was, yeah. Thank you for prompting me to remember that. That's kind of how it went down for me. But what about you? What was that sit down?
I mean, Anisha? I think it's similar, right? I think I went through this process a little earlier on than you, right?
And, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, Anisha and I mean, we're both have been in our relationships for 5 years, but Anisha and I got together a few months sooner than you mm-hmm. invented. And so like, I feel like, you know, we've crossed certain roads a little earlier on. And something
you gave me
on,
the preview, right? Of what was coming.
Yeah. and we help, I think that's the other thing, right? We help each other through the process. I think not just with money, but like
mm-hmm.
with all of these things. Even now, the tools that we're doing now, right? I've been asking you about like your high yield savings accounts.
And that's
like,
right.
You know, and you're asking me about other things. And so like, I mean, that's mm-hmm. that's the beauty of going through this with friends and growing together. But you know, so like in my relationship, I don't think I have like in my previous relationships to the one now, I don't have any like intense things that I remember. I just mm-hmm. you know, or things, I mean, I definitely see things and how they happened around money in my last relationship where there was a lot of judgment just in general. So when it came to money, there was judgment there.
Right.
And this person was very middle, upper class. And, you know, so, I mean, I came out of that relationship in tatters, but.
Yeah.
Or not so much in tatters. I think I came out of that relationship being like, there's a lot of things I need to change that allowed me to be with somebody who was that judgmental, and where I felt so. I couldn't be myself, right? Like,
you felt so policed.
I felt policed in so many ways. So I think that spoke to kind of how I dealt with Anisha, right? Going mm-hmm. back to like the defensive crab, because I think that's what would happen, right? Like, and my partner, somebody who has had a budget, who's, you know, had all kinds of, you mm-hmm. know, I mean, also her mother's an accountant, right?
That's so where you should
on
start.
On top of, like...
My mother was a taco lady, dude.
Yeah. And on top of, like... And, you know, she didn't grow up wealthy either, right? Mm. Like, or with generational wealth. She saw her parents be immigrants and struggle. And, you know, they didn't purchase a home until, I think, she was in college, right? So they... She saw them struggle and then build, but she didn't experience like wealth or, you know,
extreme hardship.
Or those things. Yeah. But she had these tools and this kind of like other kind of capital, right? Of like having a mom who's an accountant who knows about money, who, when she, you know, left home, her mom sat down with her and like, this is how you do a budget. This is how you manage your finances and like, you know, have a savings. So when I met my partner, she had a bunch of savings. She had like a CD and a IRA or all of these things that I'm barely now being like,
right. You're learning about.
I heard my brother talk about these things, right? Because again, he was somebody about making money and out of the need to make money. So I've heard those words before because he talked about them.
Mm-hmm.
But and he's also always had them, right? But for me, it was like, what? Like,
what is that? Yeah.
Money in my regular savings account, like I, let alone like I'm trying to not overdraft right now, okay? Like
right
at that time, right? I'm like, I'm trying to pay all my bills, pay my rent, like
right,
buy my nice clothes, and then not buy
nothing further than that. Yeah,
yeah, and like just so spend enough so I'm not overdrafting, but where I'm keeping my credit intact. Mm-hmm. And like where I feel like I'm have enough to just like live.
That's real. That's where a lot of people are at right now, to be real.
Oh God. Yeah. I mean, that is where I was. And so I think with, I can't even remember where it started, but like, I think, you know, like, yeah, I mean, I think it was similar in terms of like, oh, like those Jordans are so much money. like, why are you trying to buy all that? Or
right. Or I mean, multiply how many Jordans a year, you know?
Yeah, like, I mean, I wouldn't buy that many a year, but maybe like 1 to 2 a year. So it's not even like that much. But it's also when I'm buying that and don't have a savings account and don't have money when... I mean, I think the thing is that like Anisha saw me stress out about money a lot. Like she was also stressed about money, but again, in different ways, right? Like like making sure she's saving, making sure she's gotten everything, you know, just a different kind of stress. My stress was things would happen and then I wouldn't be able to cover it.
Okay.
So I think it was like she saw me going through that. And then there was always at that time, it was like, and for a long time, right? There was always this like, fuck, I don't have enough. I don't have enough. And like, how am I going to make this? Like, I need to find more work. I need to, you know, it was kind of like she saw me drowning in that. That was a normal part of my cycle for me. Right.
Yeah,
and so I think she would be like, well, let's sit down and let's figure this out. And what do you need to build infrastructure to so that this doesn't happen? And I was the same. I would get super defensive.
So mean. I'm so mean when I feel cornered.
So attacked. Yeah. And I'd snap or I'd break down in tears and I'd take everything hella wrong in the wrong way. And you know, and it took a while to get to a place, you know, where eventually I would let Anisha sit me down and like we'd create a budget and then I would have more anxiety. And there were multiple times because it wasn't just a one-time thing and then I got it and then it was like, okay, let's it was like many times where I'd have a breakdown about money and we'd have to sit again and like do the budget. And I didn't like the budget because the budget didn't have things for me. And like, I just, I felt so restricted. Mm-hmm. Right. And also because I wasn't making a lot of money. So it was like, how am I going to save when I'm only making $20,000 a year? And most of that is a lot of my monthly payment is going to my rent because I was living alone and because I had a horrible breakup and that's mm-hmm. just where I was. And I didn't want to leave that apartment and because it was beautiful and whatever. Yeah. Right. Like,
so like the emotions attached to your money were strong.
Yeah. So it took a long time, but eventually it was like, okay, like, mm-hmm. let me do this. And still like we would do that maybe once a semester. Once mm-hmm. a quarter, whenever I had my new money for this quarter, we'd mm-hmm. do that. We'd sit down and then it was fine. But I didn't like it. It was like this spreadsheet we'd made and then I would never like go back to it.
Right.
But it did help to kind of lay all that out. Right. And there were so many like iterations like it took a lot to get to where I am now, right? There's different yeah. ways that it looked in these last 5 years that I've been with my partner that kind of like what you've said, it's kind of like once I realized that she wasn't attacking me, that she wasn't judging me, that
not your enemy.
There was a lot of fights because my stress was stressing her out. She's like, how are we supposed to build a life together if this is how you're dealing with your money?
Like and a true Virgo, like, your stress affects everyone else.
Yeah. And I'm like, well, you don't know how to enjoy your money, so let me teach you something about that. And right. you know, so it's like we'd be stressing each other out, right? Because my lack of
the girls were fighting,
my lack of care from or forethought from my future mm. was like deeply stressing her out because everything she's doing is to build for the future. Like this is what has been ingrained in her to yeah. say everything that you have to like, you know, to be thoughtful about where this money is going, what you're doing with it, and to build. Mm-hmm. Whereas for me, it's like I'm living in the present. This is what I got. This is what I'm gonna do, you know, and and I'm not thinking about the future. I'm not thinking about 30 years from now or you know, even 5 years from now, financially, I am thinking about the future in very different ways, but not right, financially. Right. And so
that's like, real.
I think that's also a luxury too, to think about that, you know? And mm-hmm. anyway, so I think like, you know, that's where it started. Then it started like, okay, let me, once I graduated or once we moved in together, mm-hmm. I wasn't graduated, right? But when we really, when I moved up here to Oakland, I was getting money from school still. I was still in school finishing my dissertation and like, you know, she was, so it was right. It was like, again, like kind of more under a microscope because now we were living together.
Oh yeah. You go to the grocery store together and realize that this person's putting 5 items in the cart and you're putting 15 and you're like, wait, you don't buy all this? Like, at least that was my experience. Or this person's looking for coupons and I'm not.
Oh no. Yeah, no, I can't fuck with that. But, because I'm just like, what? We can buy whatever we want. It's groceries, right? Like, I'm like, you're not going to limit me, but.
Right. That's funny.
But yeah, so we've done a lot. Like there's a lot of spreadsheets between now and where I started. And I think, you know, again, there was a big shift, right? And the big shift for me was getting a job. Having this actual income, right? Mm-hmm. Actually having money, right? Like, and also because that took a stress off of like, okay, I'm not scraping by every semester getting just this chunk of money that I have to spread out for like 3 months.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
I'm not making $20,000 anymore. I'm making way more than that, essentially. But, you know, so I think that was one shift. A big shift again is, you know, I'm like, I told Anisha like 2 weeks ago, I'm like, you have been so patient with me. I don't know how you wake up with me.
I tell her all the time, thank you for your
money stuff. But I'm like,
tells me the same.
I'm like, how did you not break up with me? I'm like, I would burn through my money. I had no, like, I'm like, how did you have so much patience with me?
She's like,
I saw your potential. She's like, you really don't know how much I love you, right? And I'm like, no, obviously not, because like, I would have broke up with me, you know, seeing the irresponsible financial actions I was taking.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's like, and that's why I'm saying it's like, it's not one particular moment, but it's so many moments of
accumulation of them.
I've been trying to break through this cycle for so long.
Yes.
But it had to come from me, right? Like, Anisha provided a lot of tools and a lot of safety and a lot of support. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. But ultimately it had to come from me, because I had to decide that I no longer want to, you know, she, I mean, even if she wanted to, she couldn't force me into shit. Right.
Right. I think that's true for both of us.
Right. Like, just like you, no matter what homeboy, what Ben was saying is like, at the end of the day, you're not going to do shit unless it's coming from you. Right.
I can break wall when I want to. Yeah.
Yeah. And so the same for me, but it does help, right, to have a cheerleader / coach / you know, motivational speaker / whatever.
Yes, and it goes both ways.
Embodied. Totally, totally. Because totally. It's not like and I'm sure my partner will tell you the same, how much she has learned, right, from the ways I've dealt with money, or she's learned to, you know, and I know this because we've had these conversations, like we've learned from one another. And so, like, you know, now that I've had this full year of having a income, and I've literally bought myself everything I've ever wanted, right? Like, I mean, I don't know, like,
you're living a rich life.
But not even, but like all the things I've wanted, I've bought them, right? Like we got a new bedroom set, like, we bought a nice sheet, mostly things for the house, right? But
yeah,
like,
but they're things that improve your life condition, like your life's quality. Yeah.
Yeah. And we bought whatever we bought, right? Like, ultimately, also because I am in therapy, I'm journaling, I chant every day. I'm also very reflective, right? Because these things don't happen in a vacuum, right? Like, there's a whole setup of how, for me, if you know me, and when I'm really in a good place, everything I do is really, I'm a really intense person, right? So like, everything I do has a much deeper meaning. I think everything we all do has a deeper meaning, but I choose to.
No, you take it seriously.
I go in it and I look at it and I analyze it, and it's like, oh shit. Like, even when I was telling you last week, I'm like, I never saw myself living past a certain age. I never imagined actually getting married. I never imagined actually buying a house. So then why the fuck would I try to save money?
Right.
I never saw myself in the future. Right. And so it was like this huge, like, explosion of like, whoa, like, realization of like, why would I save for the future if I never saw a future with me in it?
So much about money is about visualization. Like, what do you see for yourself? Self-awareness. Like, if you're with a partner that isn't doing that work but has the money, like I was, they're not reflecting on what they have. So how can they help you? How can you help them? You know?
Yeah.
You can't.
And, you know, I told Anisha, like, I told my partner, like, I want to buy a house. And she's like, okay, but if you want to buy a house, like, we can't just buy a house. Like, we need to... We need to, like,
think about it,
and we need to save, and we need to, like, And I was like, no, we could do it. We could just do it. We'll figure it out. That's my, like, I don't know what part of my chart, but that's the, you know,
that's the Sagittarius
we don't have to be
part.
Methodical. We could just do it and then we'll figure it out and we'll get ourselves in this situation. And then we'll be stressed out about money because that's how I'm used to living. Right.
That's what my mom calls the pendejo spirit.
Yeah, I got that. And
me too.
Because I'm used to creating chaos and living under all this crazy, you know, it's like these are all the things I grew up with. Instability, chaos, you know,
right.
Scarcity. And I thrive on this shit. Mm-hmm. And so the more I've been chanting about this and the more I've been journaling about just everything in my life, and I've just been like, this is a really toxic cycle that I've created and I can break out of it. Mm-hmm. I don't need to live this way. And, you know, that's when I got onto our friend and our friend Leanna brought it up, but actually this you need a budget thing, mm-hmm. but Sylvia had brought it up to me like a year or even 2 years ago.
Yeah.
But I wasn't ready at that time. I wasn't ready. I wasn't mentally ready. So like when Leanna brought it up this time around, I was like, oh shit, let me check that out again. And so
I think I started mine last year. Yeah. Around when the time Sylvia,
I started one, but like never did anything with it. And then this time around, I was like, you know what? Let me try it again because I'm really in the space of like, yeah, I do want these things. I want to have wealth. I want to, at least while we're living in this capitalist society, like
you might need it.
I'm gonna need it. And I'm, you know what? My thinking too is like, I lived in poverty for so long and in a poverty mindset for much longer that I don't want to live there anymore. I want to live in a place of abundance, in a place of how do I use my wealth to reintegrate it into my community, and how do I use my wealth to support people and queer young, and this is a dream that Anisha and I have, and I think she has had this dream because again she's had a vision for her life in the future. I think I'm just coming to it, but our dream is to have a house, not just to have a house, but to have a house so that we can at some point house queer young people of color who can't house themselves.
Oh, right? She's such a Libra. I love it.
We also want to adopt a child, right? And so like, so I think it's like, it's not just about having money to buy things, but it's like, for us at least, it's like having money to spread that wealth and to not to be Captain Save-A-Ho, but to also like to be saviors, right? But to really invest in our, not just ourselves, but our community.
Other people. Yeah.
Invest in. Yeah. And so I think it's kind of like these tangible things have allowed me to be like, okay, let me, even the all, again, the chanting, the journaling, all these things have been like, I need to break away from these beliefs that don't serve me, that I'm not good with money, that I'm not good with math. That
they're
I'm
not true, like, first of all.
They're not true. They're just things that I learned. And so it's been so interesting that like now I'm like reading everything. And what I love about You Need a Budget, or the acronym is YNAB, and you can find them on Instagram at You Need a Budget, or youneedabudget.com, is that more than they provide a spreadsheet, and you literally, you create a budget.
It's super, super easy to use too.
Super accessible, super easy to use. They have you budget like into categories, into even different monies, and like, you know, they're not about restricting yourself. So it's not about not having money, allocating money to things that bring you joy and allow you to have fun, but it's about just creating categories for them and then budgeting for them. And beyond that, it's like, they also have a lot of YouTube videos that really help you with learning about these different things. They've helped me create a plan for getting rid of my credit card debt.
Yeah, right?
Because I, even though I've been working to cut it down, I you know, last year I consolidated my debt. So that was one step I took last year. And so now everything's in the same place with a much lower interest rate. But now I'm like, okay.
Now you have a plan.
Now I have a plan on how I'm going to tackle it month to month, how, which thing I'm going to tackle first. I've created a list of which one I'm going to tackle first, second, third. I think there's like five things I need to tackle, but you know, I've created that list, and all through like watching all of these videos, they also have people, they do live workshops, on Zoom that you can join around anything. Like if you want to learn how to cut spending, which I don't, but if you want to learn how to budget with a partner, if you want to learn just like using the actual platform, what that looks like. So I think I'm in a place now where I am open to receiving this information. So I'm looking at it and I'm like getting excited, right? Like that's what I'm saying. Like I'm really a student right now.
Me too.
And we didn't even realize we're reading the same book, but we're reading the same book.
I love it.
So
without planning it, without even knowing until we just found out.
Yeah, right before recording. So
what was the name? It's I Will Teach You How to Be Rich by what's homeboy's name?
Ramit Sethi.
Yes. I'm in a different place than you're at where like, because I'm a small business owner.
I mean, that's totally different.
And I kind of, that was my school, right? So partnerships are the school of money for some. For me, it was a combination of like my small business and my art with like partners. So I had to kind of get my money together to be able to like ship my art and print it and send it to people's homes. And figure that out. But I've been reading up a lot on investments and like Roth IRAs, and I've been following, I'm going to include a couple of folks on TikTok that I've been learning from when it comes to investing your money. I can't believe I could say that this bitch has a portfolio, you know, like that's such a weird thing. But beyond that, like I have an emergency fund that is healthy. If something, God forbid, goes wrong, I will be okay. And I could never say that until very recently, like the last year. Yeah. So I've been able to really make sure
that crazy.
Mind blowing, dude. I think that's what this conversation is making me reflect on, is like, fuck, we've come so far. And I'm so glad that like we've been able to journey together. Cause I don't know if I could have done this alone. You know, this conversation is a result of so many people being patient with us. And
yeah, because it's one thing for our partners who are like had a lot more education around this, and then us who are learning it together, and feel like it feels less scary when somebody like your peer, right? Not only your peer, but someone you trust and somebody that you were doing that wild shit with is
like
growing with you.
If somebody who was also hood rich with you is trying to get their shit together, they're going to feel more accessible than somebody who's like, you know, got their shit together. Yeah, absolutely. And I love that we've been on the same tip, down to reading the same book without even knowing it, because we're just that in sync, you know?
That's wild.
Yeah. And I love that. And I think that's my advice, right, for people listening, is like, you don't have to financially plan with a partner to feel supported. You could literally reach out to your friends. And talking about money might be scary at first, but I think it's one of the easiest ways to establish deep trust with other people, because money is something that we're all really vulnerable around. So to me, the most trust I've built has been around money, like talking about it. I just feel safe, to be honest, you know, with the people I can talk about money with. So, you know, it's a conversation that's difficult, but has so many rewards, I think.
And I think you're right, too, in that, like, we can reach out to friends, right? Because I've always, always in my life have had, at least as a young adult, as a, you know, adolescent or young adult, I've always had somebody in my life that had their shit together around money, right? I've always mm-hmm. had my brother who's always been super savvy with that stuff. I've always had my friend Tatiana, mm-hmm. right? Who's mm-hmm. always been that person, who's always had a budget, who's always had that kind of forethought with the future in terms of financial planning. Mm-hmm. I've always had people that I could tap, and sometimes I would about like certain particular questions, but mm-hmm. you know, it's also about the like, I didn't want to be vulnerable in those ways.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I think it's scary, but it's so rewarding. And I can totally, like, at least in my experience, like all the 1-800-PAY-FM, all the emotional labor conversations, all of the advocating I've done for artists to get paid, it's directly correlated to my personal life shifting.
Hell yeah. Yeah.
Like the reason I'm so very loud about artists getting paid and knowing their worth is because I did that in my own personal finances. Right. So mm-hmm. I'm just literally reflecting back at the world what I've been doing internally for myself. So, you know, I hope that like this conversation gets you started into really being self-aware, journaling, whatever you want to do. You could do the 8 things Jack does. You could start your new, you need a budget, whatever it is that you do, whatever you need, you know,
you all know yourselves, yes. right? And what works for you. I'm yes. not saying this is recommended actions to take. I'm saying this is what I need to, right. It's like brushing my teeth in the morning, right? Got to brush my teeth, wash my face, chant, journal. I mean, that's what I do because I know myself, you know, yes. that may look differently for you, mm-hmm. but I think what we're saying more so is like, the question of like, what is my relationship to money is a very deep,
yes,
and wide ranging question, and it is something to reflect on, right? Because it does, as Angelica has been saying throughout mm-hmm. this talk, it has a deep correlation or direct correlation to like how you experience yourself or what your relationship to yourself is, right? And what you think about yourself or what you don't think about yourself, and And it could, I think it can also go the other way too, right? We just so happen to be two people who would blow through money, but I think on the opposite way, in the opposite, right? And this is what I always would always tell my partner. I'm like, in the opposite way, people who are very micromanaging of their money and very in control have scarcity issues, right? Yeah. Around their money, but they yeah. hoard their money instead.
Just right? because they so act on it differently doesn't mean it's not the same problem.
That's what I'm saying. There's different ways that people deal with the scarcity and fear around money and stress around money. Mm-hmm. Some people do it in maybe ways that are more deemed as harm. More productive or, you know, and some with more harm. But I think at the end of the day, like, even if you know how to budget and you have good credit, like, it's still important to ask that question, right? Because I think
yeah.
at the end of the day, there's room to grow, because as in any relationship, we can't be stuck or stagnant, right? There's always somewhere to grow in that relationship.
Exactly. Exactly. And people who grow with you at some point or another, if you want a long lasting partnership, you're going to have to talk about money.
Yeah.
Sorry to be the bearer of bad news, but even if you don't want a partner, you might have a business partner. You might have anybody, really.
Yeah, if you want to do anything in life, you have to have this conversation with at least yourself.
Somebody, even yourself, which is more important than anything. Like before I was sitting down with my partner, I had to really face myself and the mean bitch inside my head telling me that I couldn't improve or I couldn't change. So...
exactly, the bitch that was judging my damn self.
Yeah, and we have really mean people inside our heads. We've talked about it before, but you know, mine's getting nicer with age, I think, as I do the self-work, right? But this isn't easy stuff. So we hope this conversation is a catalyst for you to do whatever you feel is best. Only you know that.
Yeah.
So
and this is just the beginning too, right? Like,
I mean, yeah. So much more to learn.
Yeah, there's so much more to learn, like, of what all these different things mean, right? Like, mm-hmm. you know, I feel like I'm just scratching the surface on learning about investments or mm-hmm. high yield savings account and how to, these conversations around like building wealth, right?
Yeah, I'm learning all the acronyms, which I never thought I would know what an ETF is or an index fund or a mutual fund. And now if you quiz me, I could totally tell you, you know?
So maybe we can do a whole other episode on just like,
absolutely, you
know, on breaking those things down. But I think like, mm-hmm. because there is so much psychological and emotional trauma around money, I think this conversation is where we wanted to just
start
because when this is who we're about, right? Or what we're about must be in. And yeah, it's about the reflection and the process and building together. And I thought it was really important to have this conversation and be vulnerable because it is something that I think people are not vulnerable about, mm-hmm. right? It's like either you have money or you don't have money, but you don't know, but you don't talk about it otherwise.
Yeah.
It's such a taboo in our society, or it has been historically, to talk about, right? And it's mm-hmm. like, that's why I told you, Angelica, too, like, I love that you are so vocal about it because it teaches mm-hmm. us, right? Like, we don't, in our society, one, artists aren't valued, so then we don't try to pay them for their, so we don't try to pay them for what they're worth, right? Because there's assumption that artists are free and we have free access to this. And
right.
And
art might be free, but my rent is not, so.
Right.
Absolutely. No, thank you for bringing up this topic. I think it was such a needed conversation. Thank you to everyone listening, and just thank you for listening. You don't have to do anything after this if you don't want to. I think it's about what's next for you, right? It could just be sitting with this for a while. Everyone's on their own journey at their own pace. Don't compare yourself to anyone else. We just hope that sharing our journey has helped you think about your own. So mm-hmm. I guess we'll see you on the, we'll talk to you on the next one. You won't see us. Bye, y'all.
Bye.